hear you finish.
Oh, yeah. No. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the May 19th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature, May 19th, 2015. If you have cell phones or electronic devices, please silence them for the meeting. If there should be an emergency, like a fire, please exit to my left, or to my right at the back of the room, to my left in the front of the room, and please don't use the elevator if there is a fire. I wonder if you'd please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Can we please have the roll call of members?
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank is asked to be excused, and Ms. Chalk is asked to be excused. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
12 members present.
We have a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'm going to ask if Kathy Luz Herrera would come up. We're pleased this evening to be giving one of our monthly Distinguished Youth Awards, and Kathy is going to tell us about a wonderful recipient.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me? I'll just talk louder. Hi, everybody. It's a great honor and privilege to invite Francesca Merrick and her family and friends up tonight. And
John Raymond,
who nominated her for this award. Y'all can come up on this side. It's easier. You won't have to hit the cord like I almost did. This is a big deal. In our community, we require a lot of volunteerism. Maybe not require, but if you live here, you want to get involved. And this youth, Francesca Merrick, is somebody who has gone above and beyond in her volunteerism for Tompkins County, and she's just starting out. John knows her personally and will say a few words. He nominated her for this award, and this is something that we in the legislature are proud to do. This is a Distinguished Youth Award, and it is sponsored by Bangs Ambulance, the Tompkins County Legislature, Specialty Trophy and Awards of Dryden, Purity Ice Cream, who doesn't like ice cream at this time of year, and Cayuga Radio Group. These are all good community members, and they recognize our great community member youth. So here's John to speak to you a minute.
Okay. John, you can move the microphone. So
sure, there we go. I'm not used to this.
About 6 inches away.
They don't give these to me in class. Excellent. All right. I will just read the letter that I wrote about Francesca when I nominated her. So, dear county legislators, I'm writing to nominate Francesca Merrick for the Distinguished Youth Award. I have been the coordinator of the LACS service program for over 20 years. And I can state without hesitation that Francesca is one of the most thoughtful, dynamic, and community-minded students I have known. Francesca has volunteered in so many ways, both big and small, throughout the community. The floating classroom, a BJM kindergarten class, One World Market, Catholic Charities clothing drive, the food bank of the Southern Tier, and I could go on and on. Yet it is not just her volunteering that is so impressive, but that she works to make social change through long-term projects and community organizing. She has been working with the West Hill community, helping to create community forums and give a voice to those who do not always get heard. She has been working on Native issues, assisting with the First Peoples Festival, teaching the community about the Two-Row Wampum, and TAing a class that shares excuse me, that works to establish connections with the Cayugas at the Share Farm, the Cayuga Share Farm, and with the Mohawks at the Akwesasne Freedom School. And Francesca and I and a whole group of folks just got back midnight on Sunday after a week there. Similarly, Francesca has been part of the Youth Venture Program via the United Way, winning grants to help her create a curriculum she is designing to educate teachers to help elementary school students learn about gender equality and related issues. She thinks big. She sees this project as starting in the Ithaca schools and then spreading to other communities, even beyond New York State. Finally, she has been a teaching assistant for my service class as a junior, leading students both older and younger than she is. She leads in many ways through her intense work ethic, through modeling what it means to listen and compromise, through speaking her mind on matters of principle, through taking risks and accepting setbacks as part of service work, through sharing her wit and powerful voice. So I present Francesca Merrick.
I'd like to put Francesca on the spot here and ask her to speak to us about, let's just say, some of the highlights of the fun projects you've been doing. If you just have a few minutes, and then I'm going to hand you the award, and we're going to do a photo op, which is my favorite part.
All right, well, you'll have to excuse my voice because I have a cold and it's starting to get lost somewhere. But I guess one of the highlights of the service work I've been doing has been my experience with the Youth Venture Program, the United Way. I started it last year, and I've been doing it for 2 years now, so this is the second school year I've been doing it. And it's a really amazing program that lets young people like me create our own social ventures, create our own businesses, organizations, and lets us actually think big, like what Sean was saying. And I really wouldn't have been able to do that without them. So being able to create my own curriculum has been a huge step forward for me, also just in growth and maturing, I guess, as a young adult. It's been a huge process, learning how to follow through, learning how to write emails to people and talk on the phone, you know, just like little things like that. It's been really important. And I've also gotten to meet great community members at events such as this. And yeah, so I guess I'm just really grateful for all of you guys and grateful for the experiences I've been given. Thanks.
So at this time, it is my honor and privilege to present to Francesca Merrick the 2015 June Distinguished Youth Award on behalf of the Tompkins County Legislature. This award comes with some other goodies. Oh, here. You can tell. It comes with some other goodies. Goodies everybody wants. I have to say what they are because they're very cool. It's a cooler. Is it a cooler? It's a cool backpack from Bang's Ambulance that I bet has some things in it. There's a T-shirt. I think there's a coupon in here for Purity Ice Cream. And, of course, the wonderful trophy. I can't help it since this is your moment to say that putting somebody on the spot like that is something that makes a lot of people quail, but I think that you're very well prepared, and we want to do everything we can to support you in your future endeavors. So thank you very much.
Hope that inspires all of us to work even harder to encourage our community members to nominate young people for this Distinguished Youth Award. I'm sure it means a lot to the recipients. It means a lot to the people who make the nominations, and it certainly means a lot to us here on the legislature. I don't think we have an executive session tonight. We have privilege of the floor for members of the public. I have blue cards. If anyone would like to speak to us on privilege of the floor, We would ask that they please sign and fill out a blue card in the back of the room and move it forward, send it forward, excuse me. You're allowed 3 minutes to speak on any topic. And we do have a countdown screen that will keep track, and at the end, if you're still speaking, there'll be an audible bell. Please, if you're still speaking, conclude at that point. By signing the blue card, you're agreeing to a 3-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor, and you agree if you cause a disruption, you will leave the chambers. The first one I have tonight is Rebecca Elgee. Rebecca, would you please say your name and what municipality you're from?
Hi, I'm Rebecca Elgee from the city of Ithaca, and I'm here tonight to encourage this legislature to reaffirm the New York Health Act as with a resolution. This was done a few years ago, and we have had a campaign which is really moving the bill ahead, and there is a promise of support from the Speaker of the House and the Assembly to bring the bill to the floor this coming week. So what we're trying to do is gain more support from municipalities, particularly upstate, and we feel that there are a number of reasons it's appropriate for this body to affirm. One is that the legislation is consistent with the goals of the consortium that was formed in Tompkins County, with the provision for health care benefits and cost controls. And that's exactly what New York Health would do. It would decrease our property taxes because it eliminates the county share of Medicaid. And it would also lower the cost of it would take away the cost of employee benefits for the county because they would be covered under New York Health. It would give universal coverage with expanded benefits and a choice of provider, and it would give significant savings. In fact, the analysis of the bill indicates by Gerald Friedman that we would save $45 billion per year in New York State under such a system. And it would do this because of savings to decrease administrative and operational costs and with increased bargaining power for pharmaceuticals and medical devices. And the savings for most taxpayers and businesses would be significant. 98% of our taxpayers would see a decrease because they wouldn't have premiums and high deductibles. And the bill currently has passed out of codes and the Ways and Means Committee and is ready to go either to the Democratic Caucus or to go straight to the floor. So we're very excited. We haven't been this close for years. And there are now 82 sponsors, and it takes 76 to pass it. So we're quite confident that if it does, in fact, go to the floor next week, we could have it passed in the Assembly. Thank you.
Thank you. Barbara Harrison.
I'm Barbara Harrison, and I am from the town of Ithaca, and I just want to emphasize one point of what Rebecca Elgee had been speaking about in relation to the New York Health Act. So I just want you to, excuse me, to speak a little bit about the Greater Tompkins County Municipal Health Insurance Consortium. And for those people that don't know what it is, I'm going to just give you a short background. It's an insurance company that was formed under Article 47 of the New York State insurance law to provide health insurance for municipal employees. It is made up of 17 participating municipalities, 16 Tompkins County municipalities, counties, City of Ithaca, 13 towns and villages, and one adjacent county municipality, the City of Cortland. It began working in 2011, and it was formed because of the rising health insurance costs, and the goal was to pool resources in order to share the services due to limited revenue from property taxes. And as Rebecca stated, if the New York Health Act was passed into law, property taxes would go down. So the impact of the consortium thus far has been the pooling of resources, $1 million savings, 94% of premium goes to claims versus private insurance, spreading risk over a larger population, and increased efficiency and reduced administrative expenses. But the challenges, and this is where the passage of a single-payer bill would greatly, greatly help municipal workers. So there is a tremendous rise in cost of health care, and, of course, wage is not keeping up with that. The ACA, the Affordable Care Act, has decreased reimbursement rates, but coming up shortly will be the Cadillac tax on these kind of plans. The consortium has a lack of ability to influence the network of providers of health care, and there's a limited ability to negotiate prices for medical technology, devices, and drugs. So therefore, Finger Lakes for New York Health, of which is a part of Single Payer New York, which I represent, is asking for a reaffirmation of the resolution that was passed in support of the New York Health Act. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Jamie Hendricks.
So I'm a resident from Trumansburg, and I'm here today to invite you all to a meeting on June 24th, that's a Wednesday, at 10 o'clock at GIAC. And Frank Liberti of the Rochester Center for Dispute Settlement will then be here in town to give a presentation on the value and challenges of civilian review boards. We have been working on this meeting for the last half year, and we invited personally the mayor and the chief of police and common council, and so we're in the process of inviting this many other people with a stake in this. You will get a personal email and an opportunity to ask additional questions, and if you want to help by giving these questions in advance. So this Frank Liberti is here to kind of basically help us answer two types of questions. So first, there is this question about what is the role and the responsibility of a community police board or a civilian review board or whatever it's being called. We may think it's self-evident, but apparently there is still a lot of confusion. But then more importantly, and this applies to the county, is like, where should the people go that do not live in the city of Ithaca? That have questions about law enforcement. Dus is there somewhere a place where they just can have this conversation in a civilized way without having to come here and make you like spend lots of time on answering those questions? So that is one of the basic values or outcomes that could come out of that meeting, is that the process is setting, starts moving, just to create a civilian review board at the level of the county. Again, we understand that a lot of people need to work together to make this happen, and so we're in the process of inviting all those people, and thus we hope that you or some of you will be there also, and especially Joe Marianne I'm thinking of. Then, with my remaining time, I want to, on behalf of myself and many other people, put it on the record that we thank Under-Sheriff Derek Osborne for writing this letter and for stepping forward about inefficiencies and problems just in the Sheriff's Department. Dus I'm not taking side. I'm not claiming that he's 100% right, but I'm claiming that I admire his courage to start this conversation. I mean, we in the community have been asking people to act as whistleblowers. I understand it doesn't work there anymore, so maybe it's not technically a whistleblower, but it's definitely someone who's asking you, legislators, to really look into what's going on there. And personally, I haven't said this, but I find it very troubling that Brian Robeson is the chair of Public Safety Committee, and then half a year later, after the jail has been approved, he becomes the one who manages it. So to me, that's something I think there needs to be an answer to that question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the last blue card I have. Is there anyone else who wanted to speak, who wanted to hand up a blue card? Okay, let's move on to...
Wait just a second.
Okay, we need a blue card. Thank you. Could you just state your name and your municipality, please?
My name is Kathleen Yen, and I'm in the village of Lansing. And I'm basically here to request that the Tompkins County Legislature reaffirm their support of New York Health. And I'm not going to repeat what the other two speakers have said, other than to say that your support to the New York State Legislature is really important. This would provide universal, guaranteed, comprehensive coverage to everyone. It accomplishes and is consistent with the goals of the consortium by providing expanded benefits and containing costs. It contains costs by having a single payment stream, which simplifies the process, increases accountability, and thank you.
Thank you very much. Kathy Luz Herrera asked if it would be possible to move her member-filed resolution up, which has to do with this issue that we've had people speaking about tonight. If there's no objection, I'd like to see if we can't
object to that.
You're objecting. All right. If there's objection, then we won't do it at this point. Okay. Let's go ahead with municipal official privilege of the floor. I don't see any out there. Privilege of the floor for legislators. Martha Robertson.
Thank you, Mike. I don't know if, as the chair of government operations, Dan's going to talk about the school board elections, but okay, I will. If you're listening to us in real time, you have till 9 o'clock to go out and vote. Vote for school board members in your district. Vote your priority on your local school budgets. I urge people to vote for the Ithaca School District budget and capital measure. I haven't followed other districts, but till 9 o'clock you are able to vote in this very important election. And I wanted to mention that this morning Tompkins County Area Development had its annual meeting, a breakfast, and released its annual report. I assume legislators will probably get a copy in your mailboxes pretty soon. It was a great gathering at Cultivari and celebrating the 41st year of TCAD being in operation. The annual report has a lot of has information about the different programs, about some of the key projects for the year. Things like the revolving loan fund that has supported Finger Lakes reuse. So it's TCAD is much more than just the IDA, which is, you know, we do talk about the IDA mostly, but it's many more things as well. So I hope you'll look for your annual report, and it was just a good gathering. I'm just glad to be there this morning. And a number of county staff, and not sure if I saw other legislators. Thank you.
Anyone else? Julie Kiefer.
As your representative on the MPO, the Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council, I wanted to report on today's policy committee meeting. I won't report on all the work we got done, but I will report on one report we heard from Tom Mank, who is part-time in our planning department and part-time with the ITCTC. He has put together an updated crash report for our intersections and our roads. And for the first time, it includes data from the Cornell University Police Department, so we have information on their campus roads. It excludes Ithaca College. We still don't have that information. He will be putting this report up online. It's not there yet. And it's fascinating. You can look up your own municipality, or you can type in a particular intersection or a stretch of road between two other roads, and you will get more than you want to know about those things. I hope you take advantage of it.
Where is it?
It will be up on the ITCTC's website. It's not there yet.
Thank you. Thank you, Gooley. Dan Klein.
Yeah, I just wanted to say it's a pleasure to see Michelle back here, our deputy clerk of the legislature. After that.
Well, we're glad to have her. Anyone else like to speak? I'd like to say something, and that is I had the pleasure of attending the 120th commencement of Ithaca College on Sunday morning. It was a totally glorious event at the Butterfield Stadium. About 1,100 students were there, not to mention crowds of family and friends and faculty members and staff. We heard three wonderful speeches from among others, Tony Kushner, the playwright, who received an honorary degree, an Olympic gold medalist, and the class president. It was the first time I had the opportunity to attend an Ithaca College commencement, and it was worth going to, and I hope that anybody who hasn't had a chance to do that will have a chance in the future. Next year is the 121st. Anyone else? We're going next to a presentation from our planning department. I'm going to invite up Megan McDonald to talk to us about an update of our county sustainability team.
Thank you. Good evening. So I'm here to just give a brief report from the county sustainability team tonight. You have a more detailed report in your packet that I won't read to you verbatim, but just a few highlights. We've been trying to establish this tradition of coming to you each spring to let you know what's been going on with the county's sustainability efforts. And if you recall, last spring when I was here, you accepted the county's sustainability strategy. And so work has been progressing on those efforts, as well as I would say the recent theme has been data collection, which will help us measure progress as we go as well. So it's also going to be important because there's a lot of amazing work that's already been done at the county. And actually organizing this information helps with some of the opportunities out there to gain recognition and also share ideas, experiences that we've had, and help provide some of that leadership by example that we talk about within the county sustainability strategy. So more recently, we've been doing things like collecting and organizing the county's utility bills in a simple way that will allow access and hopefully longevity as well, to enable different departments to see what's been going on both with their utility use as well as costs. And for the first time, integrating the solid waste and airport data along with other county facilities. Also, since I saw you last spring, the state has announced the Climate Smart Communities Certification Program. And that's an opportunity to enable high-performing local governments to achieve recognition for their leadership in sustainability. There's not currently any monetary or you know, similar awards with that. But the thinking is that in the future it will help governments that achieve that certification when applying for state grant funds. And it also provides, I think, an important recognition. And currently, there have only been a few kind of test cases that have gone through that process, so we would have the opportunity to be one of the first counties to achieve certification. This requires a lot of documentation about previous sustainability efforts and things we have underway. So it's actually a great opportunity to sort of gather all of that information together, which will enable county legislators, staff, as well as the public to have a better sense of the variety of things that have occurred and continue to take place towards the county's sustainability commitments. And it's also, and so you'll find some data within your report. We've been using the WEX fuel cards for over a year now, so we've got our first full year of data. So 2014 actually is really becoming a benchmark year in terms of having a better collection of data that can serve as a benchmark as we move forward to track our progress in a lot of different areas. I'll just give you a few examples of some things that have been happening throughout county operations. We have things like there continues to be data consolidated on virtual servers. ITS could give you a lot more information about the technical side of that. But basically, we're expanding the county's computing capacity while we're reducing the energy that we're using at the same time. County employees have been participating in workplace CSA shares, community-supported agriculture shares. So I can testify personally that it has considerably upped our vegetable and fruit intake for the better. It's also encouraged a local Tompkins County farm to decide to open to the public a CSA pickup point right out the back door here at the Tuesday DeWitt Farmers Market. So now all downtown employees and residents, anyone who wants to pick up a CSA share, has a very walkable opportunity to do that. Purchasing has been using their new online bidding system, which is greatly reducing paper use. And their efforts underway this spring and summer to actually measure the paper reduction that's been going on throughout the county due to new software systems as well as the multifunctional devices that we now have in most departments. Food scraps has been expanding throughout more county buildings and will continue to do so. And in the process, all of us in county facilities getting these food scrap recycling opportunities are getting refresher courses on recycling and other important things that we can take home as well as use in the workplace. The health department has a recreational bike share at the moment, a bicycle available for county employees that want to get a little exercise during their breaks. And they're evaluating the potential for it to be used for work activities as well to get to nearby meetings and such. And you'll find a lot more information in your packet, as well as some information about electricity and natural gas usage, fuel use as well. But I do want to say, and on behalf of the team, that we really appreciate the support and encouragement that the legislature provides, because we realize that nothing happens in a vacuum and that it's the combination of your efforts, the efforts of our fellow employees, are really helping to advance a lot of different directions in terms of sustainability. And just to end on a note of good news and some recognition as well, those of us that like to read planning articles and things, this month's American Planning Association magazine actually gives a little additional recognition for the Ithaca Airport Sustainable Master Plan. So I'll share that around. To let you know that the work that's happening, that it's gaining recognition, and it also provides a stepping stone and a learning opportunity for other local governments as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Megan. Do we have questions for Megan? Julie Kiefer.
I appreciated the data in charts in the handout, but it made me want to know more. There's a WEX fuel card purchases by department, and it gives fuel in gallons. But it doesn't say how many what type of vehicles and how many miles they've traveled. So I assume that's somewhere, and
yeah.
I could get it from you.
Yeah.
And on the same page, page 8 mm-hmm. of your report, it says so many gallons of diesel, but it doesn't distinguish between biodiesel and other diesel.
Yeah.
And it would be useful to see that. I have mixed feelings about biodiesel if it comes from corn. I'm not sure where ours comes from.
Anyone else? Martha Robertson.
Thanks for the report, Megan and Ed. I am interested. Lately there's been a bit of conversation about the calculation as we look forward and try to reach our benchmark of reducing 20% of energy use by 2020 and then 80% by 2050 and comparing to the 2008 numbers. And questions about calculating, I guess, emissions. I think the issue is emissions for natural gas. And I don't know if this is something either of you can address right now, but how does this affect our calculations and kind of where we are on this path?
How does the data collected in the report, or?
Well, just as a general question, I don't know if this, maybe that's not in the scope of what you've been working on, but.
Well, I'll say that the data collection is serving multiple purposes, so it's also feeding into what's needed for the greenhouse gas emissions inventory, which will get us a better sense. And that, I believe, is also using 2014 as kind of a benchmark year, since we've got that full year's worth of data now. So the data is being used in multiple ways that way.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Megan. Ed, would you like to say something?
I think Ed
Marks, our Commissioner of Planning.
Just to respond to Martha's question, yes, there are different ways of calculating emissions based on how you treat natural gas emissions and emissions associated therewith. And this year we will be doing an update of both the county and community emissions based on 2014 data, as Megan mentioned. When we do that, we will do sort of a sensitivity analysis about how the way methane is calculated into that overall assessment would impact the progress we've made.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. For Chair's report, I would just mention that at the annual meeting of the County Office for the Aging, our county and also the City of Ithaca received an award from AARP. We are now, through our activities, particularly those of Lisa Holmes and her staff at the County Office for the Aging, we are now recognized and certified to be an age-friendly community. And that's part of the network of AARP. And it means that we are thinking about our elderly population. We're thinking about people who will become part of the elderly population, and we want our community to be attractive to those who would like to come, work, and play here in their retirement and as they age. So we have a nice certificate, I'd point out, and I thought it was a very nice nice thing that the county received. I have some Chair's appointments tonight. Oh, I'm sorry, that's from the last meeting. We don't have any tonight. Is that correct?
No, that is for tonight. Sorry.
I'm getting mixed signals. Yes, we had two sets of Workforce Development Board appointees, and that's the confusion here tonight. This is the second set. From the Workforce to the Workforce Development Board, we have Kenneth Smith, we have Martine Gold, Jack Lance, Sage Peak, Paul Levesque, the second, Derek Burrows, Lee Dillon, and Scott Pronti. rest of them will be advisory board appointments.
Mike?
Yes, Kathy.
Can I just ask a question? I see on the chair's appointments there's new designations on the Workforce Development Board. Does anybody have an idea what the Wagner-Pizer representative is? I have a feeling it might be related to labor, but I'm not sure. So that's just what the name of it is. Is it relating to a law or legislation that was passed? Or
I got the labor connection from reading his
so did I.
And that's as much as I know.
So I was hoping that's what it was, too, but just curious.
I'm not 100% sure, but these are designated by the federal requirement of the positions that must be on the Workforce Development Board as we reorganized it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda tonight? Dooley Kiefer.
Yes, I have a resolution which I would like to add. I hope I can get 10 votes for it. It is urging New York State Assembly to adopt a specific bill that would establish a tax credit for the purchase and installation of geothermal energy systems.
Is there a second? Seconded by Martha Robertson.
Do you want me to talk more about it? Or just
only if there's a need to. Can we vote on adding it to the agenda? It takes 10 votes. Ready to vote? All those in favor of adding it to the agenda, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. It gets added to the agenda. Going back to the reports by the county administrator, Joe Mariana.
I personally don't have a report tonight, but I would like to yield a little bit of time to Paula Younger, who would like to update us on a couple of issues that we've been involved with.
Paula?
Hi, good evening, everyone.
Paula Younger is our deputy county administrator.
Thank you. I had the pleasure of reporting to the Public Safety Committee yesterday, and for those of you that were up to date on your news wires this morning, you already know that the Bureau of Justice Assistance, which is a division of the Federal Department of Justice, has agreed to our request or your request for a technical assistance regarding a review of the Hornbrook Road incident. The technical assistance is going to be provided through BJA's National Training and Technical Assistance Center. They also have a collaborative arrangement with the Office of Justice Programs that has a program that they call the Diagnostic Center, which I say sounds very highly technical and scientific, but basically they're looking at ways of sharing the funding that both of these programs have so that they can support the full range of our request, which the way that I have described it to them and the way that we have discussed here is that we want a fresh eye examination of the things that led up to the incident. We want to look at lessons learned regarding the appropriateness and proportionality of law enforcement's response and their actions. And then, of course, we would also like to have some guidance and some proactive steps on how we might improve communications both internally, and that also involves representatives of the various jurisdictions here, as well as our communications and a little bit of trust building, if you will, with the local community. So they are in agreement with all of the parameters of our request. And as I mentioned, I got that news yesterday. They have been in touch since then. So we're proactive with this. I just received earlier today a TA assessment guide, and this is their way of digging a little deeper into the things that we're looking to do and the outcomes that we would like to have. And that allows them to put into place a more comprehensive, what they call technical assistance action plan. So I have shared that information with the Chair of Public Safety, Nathan, along with the County Administrator, and we're working on that response that is due back to them by June 2nd. So just wanted to let you know that that's underway. The other update that I have, we've been working on, as you know, putting together briefing sessions for the workforce with regard to our workplace climate survey. We had a goal of offering to the workforce 12 sessions. We have exceeded that goal, and we now have scheduled 19. So 12 of those sessions are our ability to take advantage of already established staff meetings and the like that departments have. We also realized that we needed to take into account some of those departments that have very, you know, unique schedules, such as facilities, highway, Department of Emergency Response, the Sheriff's Office, and so forth. So to accommodate that, we have about 12 different sessions. In addition to that, we have what we're calling general sessions, and we have about 7 of those. And that will be open to any employee based on their schedule and their ability to attend. We have them scheduled at the old jail building. There's one that's going to take place here in Chambers. We're using the mental health building. We're using the Rice Conference Center. As a matter of fact, both Rice, the health department with the Rice Conference Center, as well as the Doerr Conference Center, has allowed me to add on some sessions so that anyone that's located up on what I refer to as the Brown Road campus has the flexibility to attend. So I just had an opportunity to finalize that schedule. There are some departments that actually have a confirmation on this, but all the department heads will have a confirmation on Friday when I'm able to send out a more comprehensive email about the details. And those are the two updates that I have, unless there are questions.
Thank you, Paula. Hands up. I've got Dan, then Dooley, then Martha.
Paula, thanks for your work on the Department of Justice evaluation. Is there any kind of time frame attached to that?
Well, they're saying an estimated 30 to 45 days to actually put the technical assistance plan together. And as I explained to the Public Safety Committee yesterday, if you think back on how you might have approached an RFA or an RFP and you're trying to put together a scope of work, if you will, that's what they need to do over that time frame, and that's part of the reason why our answers to the TA assessment document that they sent me today is really helpful and important, because they need time to identify the right technical assistance providers, is their terminology for it, that would help do that work, and then determine how much of the work is off-site, maybe a couple of visits on-site, etc. So they need some time to put that together. Then the rough estimate on how long the entire TA might take from them doing their review to whatever kind of final report out that we ask for could be in the neighborhood of 6 to 8 months.
Thank you.
Julie?
Paul, I don't think of the legislature as a department, so when will we get a presentation on the climate survey?
I can certainly... quite frankly, if all of you are on our email system and there will be announcements sent out to all staff, you will have an opportunity to receive the schedule for all of the general sessions. And I would just suggest that if you're available to attend those, please, please feel free to do so. We are also planning a legislature department head retreat. And that will also be an opportunity to learn of the survey findings, because we want to start that meeting off to make sure that everybody's on the same page and they're up to date with everything. But if you want firsthand of this schedule and you would like to try to fit it into your own, just give me a call, and I'll let you know what's scheduled and when and where it's happening.
Will the presentations have a question and answer session as part of them?
We have a brief Q&A period. Keep in mind that the purpose of this session is to make sure that all staff get a fairly high-level overview, but with important details about the results of the climate survey. So we're just making sure, once again, that everybody's on the same page. And we're trying to limit this to an hour, just to honor people's, you know, work schedules and time and so forth. So there will be an opportunity for Q&A, and we've built in, I guess, a little feedback opportunity, if you will, based on what you hear, that you will have an opportunity to actually exchange your reactions to the survey results. But always, if you've, you know, there's always the opportunity to contact me if you need more information.
The reason I asked about the legislature as an entity is that I would imagine that different departments' presentations would focus on issues specific to those departments, unless they're tiny little departments, in which case they don't have a large number of employees. And I can't imagine myself going to a number of sessions, so I was hoping that the legislature might get a general presentation.
Now, well, to clarify, this is the same presentation. These presentations are not specific to any particular department. For those that were scheduled by department, it was only to take advantage of whatever staff meetings they already had planned, so we didn't have to inconvenience them to have to add on yet another meeting. But the content of the presentation is exactly the same for all of the briefings. Now, what we do have planned down the road, and not too far down the road, is that the county administrator is planning to have one-on-one meetings with each department head, where we might get into more specific content with them. But all of these briefings, all 19 of them, are the exact same content, and it's a general overview of the survey results.
Thank you.
Martha?
So are you saying our retreat will begin with the same presentation?
I would think so. I'll caution to say there may be some things that we will learn out of the course of these briefings, where we may tweak some of this to just ensure, you know, that new learning is shared with those that need to make certain decisions about next steps. But, yes, in general, the presentation that you'll have to start out with at the retreat will be the presentation that's given to all staff.
Okay, I'm just trying to understand. I would be hearing the same thing if I went to more or less the same thing if I went, since I'll plan to go to the retreat. It would be a duplication to go to a department meeting. Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't think it would be a duplication. But keep in mind, in terms of the Q&A and reactions that people give, you'll get different feedback, different viewpoints. But my content, and by the way, Leslyn is participating in these, and Lisa Holmes is also participating. So we're all facilitating or co-facilitating across these 19 sessions.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Paul. Joe, anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
County Attorney is Jonathan Wood. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed Leslyn's hand. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks for your question, Martha. I just want to add just a little bit. I mean, the idea behind the retreat, as I shared at our last legislature meeting, was to get the mass of legislators together who can hear this. But beyond that, we have to think of next steps. And what do we do now that we have this information? And that's where we really need more legislature input about, you know, is there, what else do we need to do now that we have this information? What either policies or new things that we'll have to put in place. So the idea behind a retreat is bigger than just the overview that we're looking at an hour.
Thank you. Yes, Jim.
I have a question.
Dennis.
How was the decision made to include a legislator in the retreats? It seems to me as a legislator that if we were involved in meetings with staff and employees, that it might change the kind of response that an employee would give in one of those kinds of settings, that we have an influence even though we don't know we have an influence, and not taking anything away from anyone who's already scheduled to go. But I guess my question is, you know, I think you have potential for really getting information or not getting information that you could get if it were done sans legislator. But, you know, I don't know that.
I agree and disagree with you, Jim. I'll respond to that. given that this is a workforce diversity project,
right.
I felt inclined and convinced that at least, you know, I should be involved with this. The very first survey that we did, I pretty much did all of those presentations and got all of the feedback. Same thing with the policy, when we did the policy rolling out to all the departments. and so felt comfortable because I think people are comfortable talking. Not to mention to have one person in Paula do 19 presentations was just too much. It was just too much for one person. And we, as Workforce Diversity, work as a team. And, you know, when we thought about it, I was like, you know, I'm willing to do some of these, not a lot of them, but I'm willing to do some of these. But then we need another person as well. And that's how Lisa came on board, so that it's not all on just one person. Plus, it also adds, for me, for staff, some credibility in that the legislature is taking this seriously, that they're also hearing from us and the people who've been involved with this, that we want to make sure that, you know, it is given to them and they see us as being involved. So that's sort of how that decision came about.
Thank you. Let's go back to John Wood.
Sure. I recently attended the annual mega meeting, the Municipal Electric and Gas Alliance. I figured I'd give a brief update. As most of you know, MEGA was formed about 15 years ago between Tompkins County and Tioga County, mostly to purchase together electricity after deregulation in order to get a better price. And then we decided to open it up to other municipalities and counties. We now have about 270 municipalities, counties, and school districts. It's over 250. Last year, over $60 million was procured through MEGA, which is about 2% of all the electricity in upstate New York. So that part has really boomed. There's also been two major projects that have been very successful. One is solar. We have about 15 solar projects underway now, and about the other is hydro. We have about 6 or 7 hydro projects underway now. So MEGA is really growing, and they, particularly the renewable programs are starting to grow very fast. So that's my report.
Thank you. Questions for Jonathan? Okay. Rick Snyder asked to be, I'm sorry, Mike?
How big are the solar programs? If you don't know, it's all right.
No, I do know. Under the law, each one has to be 2 megawatts. And to build them any smaller doesn't make economic sense, so each one is 2 megawatts.
That's cool.
Jim Dennis?
The hydro plants, where are they? Are they old ones they're refurbishing, or are they going to be new?
No, they're all old ones that are refurbished. Actually, the way it works is about 20, 30 years ago, there were a lot of hydro plants built in New York State and elsewhere, and they're all now in terrible condition, and they're going to be rebuilt or go offline. So one of the major efforts now is to rebuild old hydro plants, one, to keep them going and also to make them more efficient. And it's an important part of the grid in New York, which most people are not aware of.
Thank you, John.
Thanks. Anything else? As I say, Rick Snyder asked to be excused. He's not playing hooky. He's actually working in his office tonight, burning the midnight oil. They're working to get some reports out. They need to have that done. Let's move to the consent agenda. I have some appointments to read from the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, to the Hillview Road Landfill Citizens Advisory Committee, Dooley Kiefer. Dooley, I think that's a life sentence for you.
Well, Beverly retired, or she would still be doing it.
Out of the Health and Human Services Committee, to the Developmental Disabilities Subcommittee, Stacy Kasky and Nancy Saltzman. From the Public Safety Committee, to the Criminal Justice Advisory Alternatives to Incarceration Board, Jason Trumbull. Resolutions we have, if anyone doesn't want it on consent, just speak up. Resolution A, budget adjustment. This is out of Health and Human Services Committee. Budget adjustment for the 2015 Tompkins County Office for the Aging Health Insurance Information Counseling and Assistance Program. That's ID 5594. Resolution B, increase in hours, nurse practitioner, mental health department. That's ID 5577. Resolution C, authorizing the, this is out of facilities and infrastructure, authorizing the filing of an application to New York State for the Household Hazardous Waste State Assistance Program and signing of the associated state contract under the appropriate laws of the state of New York. That's ID 5605. Resolution D, budget adjustment to transfer reimbursed revenue to expenditure, Highway Division. That's Resolution 5599. Out of Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution E, award of 2015 tourism capital grants, Tompkins County Area Development. That's ID 5561.
Mike, that's supposed to be under economic development.
Nice try, though.
Okay, we'll make that repair, but it's still on the consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda, please? Peter Stein, seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion, all in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? That's unanimous. I will go to reports of the standing committees. First, we have Jim Dennis, who chairs the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee.
I have no report. We have a scheduled meeting May 25th, and we'll be closed. So knock yourself out. We're not going to have a meeting on May 25th. If we need to do something, we will do it prior to the ledge meeting on June 2, right? And I think we're scheduled to do that. That concludes my report.
Questions for Jim? The old library committee, we had the third and final presentation from the three responders to the request for proposals, and that was from the Franklin Group on Tuesday past. And our next meeting will be on the 2nd of June at 9:30 in the morning. We expect an executive session at the beginning of that. It's time for the rubber to hit the road. We're going to have to make some decisions on these proposals. Can I answer any questions? Let's go to public safety. Nathan Shinagawa is the chair.
Yes, the public safety committee meeting was yesterday. And we part of one of the big reveals of our meeting has already been spoken about by Paula. And so great work. Again, thank you, Paula, for all of your hard work on that. It's really, I think I've heard a lot of from members of the community that are really happy about the direction that's been taken so far. And so thank you. We also had a discussion about body cameras. And there will be a meeting. Oh, gosh. What did I do with my notes? Oh, it's next Wednesday, I believe. And actually, we'll get this information out there. Actually, I know it's on the Ithaca Voice right now. Let me just pull that up. But we're actually going to be talking about the body camera policy has been worked on primarily by Ari Levine, who's the city attorney in the city of Ithaca. And they've been working on that. And I will just pull it up right now. Please give me just one moment here. Where did that policy go? So what's going to happen is that policy has been reviewed by many of the key stakeholders in the that it relates to, especially the road patrol officers and also by the Ithaca police officers. And that version of the policy will be revealed next Wednesday at 3:30. It's going to be at a meeting of the Ithaca Community Police Board. And that's May 27th, so next Wednesday, May 27th, in the Common Council Chambers. And we are also, after that policy is revealed at that Wednesday meeting next week, what will happen is that the undersheriff will send out that policy to all of us. Actually, he'll send it to me, and I'll send it to everybody. And so that way all of you can see it, and we can discuss it for our Public Safety Committee meeting in June. Now, while all that's been going on, they have also trialed devices, and there is now consensus amongst the City of Ithaca and also the Sheriff's Office that they are likely going to go down the road of using the taser body cameras. And the taser body cameras, I've recently read an article in The Verge, which is an online magazine, saying that it's actually the most popular camera that's out there right now. Mainly because they have a lot of experience already with videoing through their other devices that they use, mainly tasers. And so so we're likely going to go down that path. One thing that the undersheriff talked about is that they've been working on storage options, and they found a storage option that will also probably significantly reduce the cost associated with it as well. Any questions on that?
Peter Stein.
Do the taser cameras shoot you also?
No.
No.
No. Taser is the name of the brand.
The company. What?
Taser is the brand.
Ah, thank you very much.
Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you. I was wondering about the storage option. Is it on site or remote?
Well, so it originally the option was to have it be a cloud. I mean, the taser proposed a cloud-based option. And I think they're looking at it now, and Joe, you may have to clarify for me. It's kind of confusing because I don't think Brian was talked too much in detail about the technical aspects of it, but I think they were looking at some local storage option as well, or maybe some sort of local backup or something.
Right? I think that's it. I think it's largely
I
think it's largely cloud-based because
right.
There's going to be an annual cost to be able to do that,
yeah.
But I do think I heard the same thing you did. There is a local capacity to store some here.
Right, and that local capacity allows us to save a considerable amount of money as well.
Yeah. Kathy?
Just a follow-up. For myself, I favor cloud-based because I think there's less opportunity for criticism of data corruption or anything like that if it's locally based. I think local backup is a great idea, though.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Thank you, Nathan. Any questions for Nathan?
Mike, how long do we have to store stuff for?
That will actually be specified in the policy. I have not seen the policy yet. We'll find out soon. Yeah.
Martha?
I was a little puzzled at the unveiling next week that we are informed about and invited to, but not. I thought we were working in partnership with the city, and it seems like we get to open the door for them, hold their coattails, something like that. I mean, I feel like I thought we were working together with them, and it would seem to me we would normally get the policy in a draft form, not just the staff, but this is policy, capital P. This is what we're supposed to be doing. And when the sheriff and undersheriff came to the Public Safety Committee, I want to say in February when we first talked about it, there were a lot of issues, you know, a lot of things that we, you know, they raised. And as we talked, the more we talked about it, it seemed, policy issues that we would like to chew over and hear about the implications of. And so I'm kind of puzzled on how this partnership is kind of.
Yeah, well, I think that the policy is being unveiled to the Ithaca Community Police Board and then to Common Council. So all policies have to be reviewed by their respective bodies in order for them to be approved. So, you know, I'm sure that they will have discussion. Likewise, we are getting a copy of the policy, and we're going to be talking about it in committee, and we will have that time to do the same thing as well. But, I mean, I think that from an expediency standpoint, it was fine for them to work on having a detailed policy that had a lot of legal opinion on it beforehand so that we can then make modifications to it, not draft a policy from the ground up, but make modifications to it so that we can get this wrapped up, hopefully sooner than later, since it is something that the community is clamoring for.
I just hope that this isn't just something that we're just supposed to, like, join the bandwagon for. I think we need a substantive review.
Right.
However
but also,
long it takes, you know? If that takes a little extra time, I think that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
Leslie?
Well, Martha asked a big part of my question, so Nathan, let me just make sure I'm clear.
Yep.
So there is the City of Ithaca folks, law enforcement, and others have worked on a draft policy
that is going to go to the Community Police Board and then to Common Council for their look peek. We didn't have any role. We weren't at the table helping to draft that,
as far as you know. Other than the undersheriff talking to Ari about it, and they've shared that policy with the road patrol. So I'm assuming that the sheriff and undersheriff, if the road patrol saw it, I'm assuming they saw it too.
Okay.
I don't know.
No, that's
I
fine.
I think it would be a fair assumption.
Okay. And then once the city is through with their process, then it comes to us and we take a look, or at the same time?
It'll be concurrent, yeah.
Concurrent.
So once it's out on Wednesday, it's going to be a publicly available document.
Right. So we're not reinventing the wheel.
So they'll go through their review process. We're going to get a copy of it, and we'll bring it to public safety in June.
Okay. So we're not starting from the ground up. There'll be something that we are reacting to.
But the idea is that we're hopefully going to have a policy that's as similar to one another as possible, to make it as easy as possible for, you know, our not only our DA, but also our defense attorneys as well.
Peter?
Yeah, but they're doing it for their own police force, right? Mm-hmm. And they have paid their own money to get the cameras.
Yep.
And I frankly don't see why they have to be interchangeable. I can imagine that, you know, if they present a policy, we look at it, we like it, it's okay, and we say, well, no, actually, we'd like to change it this way. We can change it this way when we buy our own cameras, and it won't make any problem, right?
I mean, yeah, we could change. I mean, the policy is more about the use. I don't think it's about the tech. The technology, I mean, the technology is one aspect of it, but it's more so how are you going to store it and how long you're going to store it and when do you turn it on and
right.
All that other stuff that
but,
the policy...
But there's not necessarily any reason to keep them the same. I mean, there may be some slight cost savings if you do it that way, but
yes.
It doesn't seem to me that it's an issue that one should make...
We don't have to keep it the same.
Right.
It's just a good...
I mean, it doesn't seem
nice
like a reason to make a big fuss about, that's
right.
All.
Kathy?
I'll pass.
You're passing?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Leslin again?
It's not a question about this. It was just an addition to Nathan's report. I don't know if you got this, that tomorrow is OAR's annual meeting. I don't know if they mentioned it at your meeting. May 20th from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. And that lovely young lady sitting in the back of the room, Carrie, is the guest speaker. At the meeting, it'll be held in the same building with OAR's offices, I think, on the first floor. Tomorrow, 4:30 to 6:30, OAR annual meeting.
Thank you.
I have just two other quick items. Is that the Global Gender Justice Clinic at Cornell? Does that sound right? Yeah, Global Gender Justice. Yeah, I remember it being a Global Gender Justice. The staff from that office at Cornell came back to our public safety committee meeting. You'll recall that they went, I think, to public safety back when Brian was the chair and presented a resolution bringing awareness about domestic violence.
Yes.
And so they've been working with the Tompkins County Council of Governments to say, okay, well, what is a tangible next step? And so they have a short-term and a long-term option. The short-term is to work with municipalities to make sure that they have specific policies relating to workplace violence and domestic violence in particular, because there's been a lot of evidence that suggests that some of the intimidation tactics that come through domestic violence actually happen in the workplace, you know, by the abuser. And so they wanted us to look at that policy. So Joe and Paula are going to meet with them and see and do kind of a comparison of what they're suggesting with where we are today, right, and what our policies currently state. And then longer term, they want to do more of a comprehensive study of the county, and I mean the county loosely, you know, county as in the agencies and nonprofit organizations, and then not just the county, but also the city government and others, to figure out what our overall policy stance is on domestic violence. And that's a longer-term study that they're going to look at. And when they meet with Paula and Joe, they're just going to get some general ideas on where to start with that.
We're against it.
Hmm?
We're against it.
We're against it? Yes, we're against it. That's right. Yes, yeah. So, and so, right.
I have a resolution.
Okay. All right, and then my third thing.
Oh, I thought those were the two things.
No, I'm sorry. There was one thing that had two things in it. Now, what is my third thing? Oh, and then the third thing is we discussed the jail statistics. And, Dooley, you had given us a document a number of months ago, and which confused the committee, by the way, because it was printed on the back of on scratch paper that it was about a sleep apnea study. So people were wondering what the sleep apnea study had to do with things, but then realized that it was actually the statistics. And part of it was that we did have some discussion about it, and I think the resolution out of that is that we're going to get those jail statistics that we once had brought back. I mean, it's not just jail statistics, it's general law enforcement, public safety statistics. Yes. Bring them back. And what we want to do is really take what's there and see what's important, and actually, instead of trying to add numbers, actually reduce the amount of things that we're reporting so that we can focus on things. And then from that focus, get educated about where we need to look for information to dig deeper. In other words, get more high-level stuff on a regular basis so we know where to look from a policy standpoint. And then from there, where we know how to look, where to look, then we can actually get the request to dig deeper into a problem. And so because that's generally a best practice, I think, when it comes to organizational kind of management, is getting that high-level information first so then you can get you can then know where to look and where to dig deeper. So that's what our next step is going to be, and we'll do that in the next committee meeting.
Thank you, Nate. Dooley?
Just so you know, I did not print that on recycled paper.
Oh.
Sleep apnea study.
Oh.
That came to our whole legislature from a member of the public.
Oh, and they had probably.
That's how it came.
Okay, nice.
A hired member of the public.
Yeah. Right. Wow. Oh, thank you. Thank you for the clarification. All right. That concludes my report.
Let's move on then to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. I'm sorry. Yes, Jim.
Thank you, Michael. This has to do with public safety. It has to do with a bunch of things. Martha used my word. We've all read at least one article in the newspaper today about our sheriff in Ithaca.com. And if anyone has Ithaca Voice, you can also see that. Three things. I was puzzled. I was entertained by it and pretty concerned. And what troubles me is an independently elected sheriff, and I understand all of that. We're all independently elected, and we have an ex-undersheriff who has made some comments, and I remember very clearly when the current sheriff ran for office, the undersheriff that is not there any longer was, you know, right beside him, and he was the real reason he was going to give me credibility to run for sheriff. What concerns me about it, a couple of things. The responses that I read in the Ithaca Voice, I thought they were at best unkind in some respects to what the former undersheriff had written, politically really awful. There was an opportunity for the sheriff to take the high ground, and I think he missed that opportunity. And that troubles me. Yesterday at the end of the meeting, it was going to come up in our meeting, and then it was sort of going to be an executive session, maybe today. I believe Mike had told me that there would be no executive session about this and that the sheriff would not be here. It was my feeling at that point it would be an executive session. I don't think it would have passed the executive session test because we were really not talking about somebody, an employee that we have the potential to fire or do anything with. The sheriff can get voted out. Brian works for him. Sheriff could fire him any moment. The ex-undersheriff worked for the sheriff. He could have fired him at any moment. And I think there were some political things involved and some other things. But it troubled me when the kinds of response that I saw. And, you know, it's not my first rodeo, and it's pretty clear that you know, I may be all alone here in my concern. And if you want to roll your eyes and do whatever, like I do sometimes, you know, I'm fine with that. And I can be just the angry old white guy from Ulysses talking again. So I don't know where we go with this, but I clearly would like to have a conversation with the sheriff in a public meeting about some of these things. And Derek is gone, and I understand that. I think the man worked very hard for the county for many years and, you know, maybe deserves a little bit better, you know, as he moved on to his next place. So,
Jim, I can...
That's my thought.
I can say to you that Sheriff Lansing told me today that he would be happy to meet with a group in a meeting about this, and that obviously be a public meeting. Can we move on? Lesson being Claiborne has our Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
Well, you heard the bulk of my report from Paula. Thank you very much, Paula. You've been working very hard on this, and I really and truly do appreciate it. If I had my dredgers and the county administrator would allow me to take charge of the budget, I will hire four new bodies to do workforce diversity and inclusion work right along with you, because it is quite a bit. But I do really appreciate your time in trying to coordinate all the schedules and put things together, really do. Tomorrow is the Diversity Consortium Roundtable. I don't know if there is still room for people to register, but I encourage folks to attend if you have not registered. We, as a county, will be there tabling and making sure that the general public in Tompkins County and people who come from elsewhere to attend this event held at Ithaca College know that Tompkins County is very serious when it comes to building an inclusive work environment. So our personnel department will be there. Our workforce diversity will be represented. So we are thankful for that opportunity and the workshops and presenters. It's an amazing lineup of very talented folks when it comes to diversity and inclusion work in this country. So I encourage you, if you haven't signed up yet, to please think about it. I'm sure that there might be still, I'm looking at Paula, room left for you. I also want to just take a quick moment, which I should have done when you were talking about Ithaca College's graduation. That Thursday is TC3, our very own TC3's commencement ceremony, and it always warms my heart to attend that ceremony, especially when they are members of this community who are graduating, who I know, who graduate, who will be graduating from TC3. And, you know, TC3 does do a very good outreach in trying to reach especially young people of color in our community to attend TC3. And I know there are a few of them who will be graduating on Thursday, and I'm very proud of that and proud of the efforts that TC3 is making in that direction. So I just wanted to share that. WDIC will meet next Wednesday at 3:30, I think, right here.
Thank you, Leslie. Questions? Okay, let's go to Peter Stein, who chairs Health and Human Services.
Thank you, Mike. I have an unusually short agenda here. We had a meeting on the usual first Thursday of the month in May, and I want to report on that meeting. The Office of Aging has distributed 300 of the 412 new PERS instruments, and apparently without a glitch. They are well received by the people that get them, and there do not seem to be any problems with either installing them or using them. So that was nice to have that operation go off smoothly. There was a lot of concern that there would be difficulties, but those have not materialized. The second and third items I can sort of put together. There's this mysterious thing that I've been hearing about at various meetings that I go to with acronyms that I can't possibly remember.
One is PROS. What does PROS stand for? Why, it stands for Personalized Recovery Oriented Services. What does STRIPS stand for? I haven't the slightest idea, but I've learned to say it a lot. And the generally, what it is the following. That, and I hope I'm not making any mistakes, the federal Medicaid board gave money to all the state Medicaid operations and asked them to use that money and perhaps their own money to propose certain activities which would then be judged by a group as being good proposals or bad proposals or not so good proposals, and the good proposals would be funded and they would go ahead with them. Now, what's it all about? And what it's all about, and I hope I'm right here, believe me, it's a little complicated to hear it and remember it all and ask all the questions that you have to. But there seems to be an agreement that the best thing you can do to reduce the cost of Medicare and reduce the cost of Medicare without reducing the services that are being supplied, but even increase the good of the services that are being applied, is to make sure that when you discharge a patient from the hospital, the patient stays discharged and the patient doesn't bounce back. Now, it was hard for me to believe that that's the most serious problem that causes an unnecessary spending in Medicare, but that's what they say, and I accept that. So there are a bunch of programs that we are taking advantage of. Oh, and the whole state is chopped up into regions, and we're part of one region, and I couldn't possibly tell you who the other regions are, who the other people that we're working with, but they're neighboring counties and neighboring health centers that we're involved with. And they are developing proposals for reducing the bouncing back of patients that have been discharged from the medical, from a hospital. And the other thing, it hasn't been started yet, but it's about to start soon. And it's considered to be a really major effort at a joint process for making some kind of decision about better delivery of health services. The mental health department is, I think, going ahead on its own, unless I'm mistaken, with its own study to look into that same problem. What kinds of changes could we be making in our mental health facility which would reduce the number of which would allow patients to come and then leave and then stay taken care of in some place other than the mental health hospital. And that's what they're trying to do. So anyway, that's what STRIPS means. And I have absolutely no idea what STRIPPS stands for. Southern, FT is Southern Tier. That's right, yeah. Huh? Who knows? Anyway, that concludes my report. We're having our next... let me just give them my crucial piece of information. Our next meeting is June 4th at 4 p.m. Yes, Kathy.
Look, I have two things. One is that the way that I look at the desire for not having readmission is that if someone is in the hospital and they are sufficiently healed, then it avoids their readmission, which frequently can cost more because they decline more quickly. The fact is the readmission, the cost increase that comes with readmission isn't for readmission per se. It's because it's a sign, it indicates, it's a metric that they weren't adequately healed to begin with. So I just want to be clear about that, that the additional cost is not a result of their being readmitted as much as it is an indication that their readmission is due to them not having been healed sufficiently. I think that's an important distinction in looking at it that humanizes the intent. And the second thing I wanted to bring up is that we did have some visitors at the Health and Human Services meeting, and they talked about the New York Health Act. And I'm bringing a resolution tonight to the legislature about that. And I just want to apologize that we didn't get it through the committee, and we didn't manage to have a meeting before this meeting tonight about that. But we did have people from the public come, and they brought us a lot of information about it. And we did have, I thought, a pretty robust discussion about it. So I just wanted to let people know it's not something that comes to you without having been discussed in committee, and that with any kind of luck, we'll be discussing it later tonight and probably at the next meeting of the legislature.
Yeah, let me just try to summarize again. The idea is not to keep people... The idea is that if a person leaves the hospital and then they get sick again, then you haven't done your right thing in the hospital. You shouldn't have released the patient because they weren't in a condition to be released. So on the other hand, sometimes I remember it was standard when I was young to have women who delivered a baby stay in the hospital for a week. That was the standard thing, at least a week to 10 days, if I remember right. And it was, I believe, discovered during World War II that people did better the sooner they leave the hospital, if indeed they were ready to leave the hospital. And that original thing was done because of the need to save hospital beds in the war, to save hospital beds for new people who were new soldiers who were wounded. And so they were getting rid of the people in the hospital, and they discovered, someone did some analysis afterwards, and discovered that having those people leaving early from the hospital actually made them better. So it's a tricky thing that you have to understand, and that's why I think it's not obvious, and you have to do these experiments to see if with elderly people it is also better if they leave the hospital as soon as they can. But it both saves money and helps their health. That's the hope.
Thank you. Anything else for Peter? Thanks, Peter. Let's go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. David McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. F and I met on May 11th in these chambers. We've pretty much handled everything that we did at that meeting with two exceptions. One is a report that we got from Solid Waste on testing at the Hillview landfill, which is the old Landstrom's landfill, for those that don't know. And it is quite a history lesson on everything about that, and it was very interesting. And the other thing was a quite lengthy report from the county administrator on his draft capital plan for 2016 to 2020. And Joe has agreed to hit some of the highlights of the new items that are on that, so I'm going to turn it over to Joe.
After hearing it characterized as a lengthy report, I'll try to be brief in giving you the summary of it, and I can summarize it. You probably thought after your last meeting when we did so many borrowings, there's nothing left to do. There is a lot left to do. We continue to have a capital program that invests in essential infrastructure, which is good and important. If you look at the capital program that exists right now, and it's in our budget, if anybody is watching this and wants to do that, it's in our budget. This builds on that. There aren't a terribly large number of changes to the existing plan. There are only a couple of new projects, and I can touch on them right now. At the public safety building, it's time to replace some almost obsolete equipment out there. There are still some analog cameras on the outside and the inside of that building in a digital world, and we have to be able to conform to that. They have really hit the end of their useful life, so it's time to re-equip those cameras. And at the same time, the system that operates the jail, opens the doors, makes sure that security is where it needs to be, has also really hit the end of its useful life. It's original to the building. So it's important to be able to replace that access control system. Combined, those two things are about $400,000, and they're near term. We ought to be doing that relatively soon, and I think in the plan, it's a 2016 project. There's only one new highway project. It's a bridge. It's the South George Road Bridge in Dryden. It's a $600,000 bridge. It's been identified as one that is in need of repair over the next 5 years. So that's, I think, the only new highway project is that single bridge. And the only other variation in the plan is in the one that we've called facilities restoration. At one time we called it deferred maintenance. At one time we called it capital maintenance. During the very difficult times, we weren't able to do some work on our buildings and grounds that we really should have been doing. We just didn't have the capacity to do it. And we're now investing in those deferred maintenance needs. You see some of it happening right now in fire systems. You'll be seeing some new roofs installed. The basics, not the lavish or the ornamental, but the basics, the roofs, the masonry, sometimes parking lots, mechanicals, and so forth. The change there is we in the long-term capital plan that was developed a few years ago, the approach was $800,000 a year for 3 years, take a two-year break, and then come back and do three more $800,000 installments and then a two-year break and so forth. In seeing the work that needs to be done, the draft at least, and this is not final, but the draft says let's not take a two-year pause. Let's keep going with the first 3 years, and let's come right in behind it with another 2 years at $800,000 and really do some serious catch-up on things that if you look at our buildings and our grounds, you know that we need to do. So those are the only real changes to the plan from 2015 to 2016. It's still fluid, so it still could change before it comes to you in the form of a capital program in the budget. I close this by saying we've looked at whether all that we're talking about doing is supportable under the current amount of money, the current amount of the levy that we dedicate for capital, and it is. So if we just kept our capital portion of the levy where it is right now, the cost of all these projects, conservatively estimated, the debt can be covered with that level. However, you know, by policy, we'd like to do better than that. What we'd like to do is to increase the levy by a little bit every year. And in doing that, we're going to be able to create a capital reserve account in the future, have less debt-supported projects and more cash-supported projects. And it all works under the plan that we're drafting right now. So, again, this was the first peek, the first draft, and certainly open to ideas and input about it before it comes to you again in the budget.
Are there any questions? Martha?
Let's do Dooley, then Martha. Or who was Martha first? All right.
Comment. Thank you very much for bringing this up today, because I know I asked a bunch of questions at the last legislature meeting, and I'm just shocked there was no PowerPoint.
Oh, I wanted to try it once to see how it worked, so you can give me feedback later.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. You did it all.
By the way, in the minutes of F&I, if you'd like, there's a plain language explanation of what these projects are, just a bulleted summary of what each of these projects are, how much they cost, how much we pay for it, when they happen. So it's in your minutes of, or in the notes of the F&I meeting.
Dooley?
Yes. There was one small flurry that was followed up on after the meeting, and that had to do with the fact that the language in the capital plan describes Freeze Road as a two-lane bridge, which suggests that decision was made. That decision has not been made. So when you see something described as a two-lane bridge, all that means is that the highway manager tends to use language that reflects what the people who practice highway care, use as guidelines from the feds. But it doesn't mean that the project has been decided to be a two-lane bridge. And the reason it created a flurry is that when I heard this, I let the Dryden rep know about it, and that would be David Weinstein, and he immediately followed up with his town supervisor. And they have made it clear, I think, to the County Highway Division that there is no reason in the world that they would support a two-lane bridge for Freeze Road. So that was a little flurry that was followed up. I had a question for you about something that was on the consent agenda, and that's the resolution where we're asking DEC for money for solid waste.
Yes.
And it says the county reviewed state law and as a legislator, I certainly didn't review state law. And when it says the county, I'm assuming it means the county attorney, but I don't know. And I wanted to ask that. I didn't want to ask it badly enough to take it off consent, but I want to ask now.
I'll defer to Jonathan.
I'll be happy to tell you if you can tell me what page that is, because I wasn't looking at the consent agenda. So.
Solid waste. Hazardous waste?
It's resolution C.
Back at page 15.
Are we clear what the question is?
I think in the whereas here, the county has examined and duly considered the applicable laws of the state of New York and deem it to be in the public interest.
My assumption was that you're doing that on our behalf, Jonathan, but maybe not.
Right. Well, I mean, we've talked many times about the household hazardous waste and expanding it, et cetera, and this program. So, the answer is yes, but more in a general way.
The wording I found unfortunate, but I figure it's probably required by DEC. But I just wanted to be assured that somebody had actually looked at it, if we're saying we did it.
I mean, not that minute, but when we put in the initial household hazardous waste and when we discussed expanding it, as well as when we signed the company, so it is true. It is a true statement.
Thank you.
Okay.
Everybody's satisfied. That concludes my report as chair of this committee. I will have a report on the broadband committee as chair of that committee also.
You want to go ahead and do that?
Sure. Just would like to let everybody know that New York State finally got around to reimbursing Clarity Connect for their investment to date, and they will be able to start moving forward as soon as their contractors are available to them.
That's really good news. Questions on the broadband? Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome, Mike.
Let's go to Martha Robertson, the Economic Development Committee, please.
Thanks very much, Mike. A couple of announcements. We had we haven't had a committee meeting since the last legislature meeting, but on consent we did have approval of the capital grant recommendations from the committee. And you know, I don't think we kind of tout this program enough as, you know, being a county program, but it does some amazing things. So I'm going to indulge me for a second. So the public will hear some of the things that were approved under this program. So when they see them happening out in the community, they'll say, oh, that's, you know, maybe they'll remember that was county tourism money. The Ithaca Children's Garden was approved to do on a boardwalk, a new exhibit with a very hungry caterpillar. And author Eric Carl and the Family Reading Partnership are involved. I think that means Carl's going to be here, and I think that will be very cool. There will be a study of the Stewart Park buildings. The Chamber Foundation is doing this study, a more detailed study than they have so far of what maintenance and improvements are needed so they can develop a plan to enhance those buildings, a key asset for the community.
May I interrupt just for a moment? I was knifed in the back by a drone. I have to leave. I was at a...
You got stabbed in the back.
I was at a doctor's office before, and you know, when you're 85 years old, they dig holes in your back because it's precancerous, and I think the Band-Aid fell off. So rather than put blood on this $1.2 million floor, I'm just going to leave.
Jim, can we help you in any way?
What?
Can we help you in any way? Are you okay?
I hope it doesn't mess up the leather in my seats in my car.
Oh. You're excused.
Yeah, that's the best excuse I've heard for getting out of a meeting.
I will do anything to get out of a meeting. It doesn't hurt, but it sure looks great. I ruined my shirt.
Oh, try stain stick.
I'll see you.
Bye, Jim.
Well, that's something that's never happened before at a meeting I've been at. So, shall we continue, Martha, please?
Let me try. Okay. Lake Street, the bridge over Fall Creek at Lake Street is going to be improved, and so there's a plan to enhance that spot so people can really sit and enjoy the falls. The farmer's market is going to get 6 new bathrooms and a trailer. Yes. Anybody who's been in that line is going to appreciate that. The Museum of the Earth, PRI, and their Museum of the Earth, the Smithsonian in Washington is redoing their fossil hall. And of all the places in the country, I suppose the world, where they've decided to recycle those exhibits here, they're giving them to PRI. Now, PRI needs money to install them and make them work here and labels, et cetera. So there's a grant through the Tourism Capital Program to install those. I think that's astonishing. You know, we're getting Smithsonian exhibits here. And the Science Center, you know, the Sagan Planet Walk that starts on the Commons and goes to the Science Center and now goes to Hawaii to recognize Alpha Centauri. Well, who knew there's something called an exoplanet, Kepler-37d. And the exact distance in terms of the scale of the Sagan Planet Walk is the moon. So in the fall of 2015, there will be a plaque installed on the moon by the Astrobotic Technology Incorporated, a thing that's going up there, and Science Center's Sagan Planet Walk will extend to the moon. Now, I don't think the tourism program is going to get us there to go see it, but we'll be there. So when you look at night sometime in the full moon, we'll be there. So I just want people to know about what's going on. And speaking of tourism, the Ithaca Festival, I can't believe nobody during privilege mentioned that before we meet again, the Ithaca Festival happens downtown. May 28th, Thursday, is the parade. It goes through May 31st. And I guess Marcia's got plans for us for the parade.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. June 1st is the next committee meeting. It's also at 12, and I mentioned this before, Monday, June 1st. At Cultivari, the Regional Economic Development Council is having a workshop for people interested in putting proposals together for the regional council grants. So again, that's June 1st, 12 o'clock at Cultivari, and 3:30 June 1st is our next committee meeting. Among other things, Patricia Carey will be talking to us about child care to continue and the county's role in that to continue the conversation we had with Sue Dale Paul last meeting. So that is my report.
Thank you, Martha. Questions? Okay,
excuse
let's move
me, Martha,
on.
You said the meeting would take place instead of at the usual time at noon, is that right?
No, the committee meets at 3:30 Monday, June 1st.
Right, oh, okay. That's what's on my letter. Yeah.
Right. In addition, there's a separate meeting. The community is invited to learn about the regional council proposals and how to put in a proposal at noon the same day.
Okay, Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Nathan, is your hand up?
No, sorry.
No, it's not. Let's go to government operations. Dan Klein chairs it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We haven't met since the last time legislature has met. Our next meeting is a week from today, May 26th, at 3:30 here in these chambers. One item that's on the agenda that may be of interest is the apprenticeship policy of the county. We'll be looking at that again. We will have members from Common Council will be here, that since the city looked at their policy recently, and we'll have members of Labor and who knows who else to come hear about, to come talk about that. I'd also just want to mention from the broadband report that while it's great news that Clarity Connect got the money from the state, that I just want to make sure you're aware that the town of Caroline is still not included in that grant, and there is no plan at this time of how to get broadband into the town of Caroline. So stay tuned for that ongoing saga.
Questions for Dan? Thank you, Dan. Oh, go ahead, Leslie.
So the apprenticeship policy that the committee is looking at is just sort of, is there a plan for changes or anything, or are we just sort of looking at where it is now?
So the Government Operations Committee looked at it last year and discussed various parts of the policy, and that we just take another look at that. And so I guess one of them would be the threshold level at which projects qualify. And I guess we'll be looking at all aspects of it just to see if we want to go any further into it. That's my understanding.
Okay. Thank you.
Martha?
Yeah, I guess you reminded me, Dan, and I guess this is for Dave. The state is, I think there's more money in the budget. I think there's a lot more money in the budget for broadband. So I don't know if the committee wants to look at that, and maybe there's a way to fill the gaps that we're still going to have with Clara Kenna project.
We know about that, and also the fact that Chuck's right now talking with people down there to try to, you know, manipulate things. And I believe that he's going to have a report to TCOG next month on exactly where he's at with the project and what, if any, changes have occurred. And I know he's aware of the new money that's out there in the state, but I am not sure why at this point he hasn't gone after it. We haven't had a chance to sit down and talk about it.
Okay. Thank you.
I could say a little bit about that, too, is that that money is supposed to be used for fiber optic cable, which isn't appropriate for our topography. So offhand, it doesn't seem like it's the best fit, but as Dave was saying, Chuck is going to see if he can manipulate it to make it more appropriate.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Let's go to Dooley Kiefer for the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee report.
Thank you. We are meeting tomorrow at 3:30, and we will hear a presentation on the Water Resources Council's annual report, a presentation on the Ag and Farmland Protection Plan update, an update on the Aquifer Study Program, and we will get an updated foreclosure report. So those are the most interesting items on the agenda.
Questions for Dooley? Dooley, I think you have Resolution F, the one you added.
That is the member filed one that's F. Mine would be G, probably.
I'm sorry. What is the number? It's G. I'm sorry.
Should I move to that?
Since you've got your committee report, let's do that.
Okay. The resolution that was added is number 5635. It's called Resolution G, urging the New York State Assembly to adopt A2117-A, amending the New York State tax law to establish a tax credit for the purchase and installation of geothermal energy systems. I'll move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion.
This came to us on very short notice, or came to me on very short notice. It came from the EMC, where they didn't have time to put it through their usual committee protocol and get a recommendation to our committee and to our legislature. But time is of the essence because the session is winding down. And this particular tax credit would put geothermal systems on the same kind of footing as solar PV and that the state supports. And our planning department vetted this resolution to make sure it referenced what we're already doing in our county. We accepted a Hart Foundation grant to move forward with various things, and our comprehensive plan includes references to air and ground-based thermal projects and geothermal. So the planning department is supportive of this resolution, and I hope that all of you will be, so that we can get our support in time to get this registering with our state legislators.
Arthur Robertson.
Yes, thanks. I appreciate your bringing this, and I know I think everybody was surprised to look up and discover that the Senate had already passed the bill. So I would like to offer another resolve that would have asked that the governor sign it. So if it's,
that's very friendly.
Okay. So resolve further that the legislature also urges that upon passage by the Assembly, the governor should sign Senate 2905/A2177 into law.
Is it friendly to the mover? Is it friendly to the seconder?
Yes.
Okay. So that is added. You ready to vote on this?
Could I ask
Kathy?
A roll call vote, please?
Certainly.
And can I just ask?
Go ahead.
Dilly, do you know how it would work? Would it be, is it a set credit? I wasn't able to find this. A set credit for the amount or whatever you spent, it comes off your bill? Or do you know
I think
it
it's a percentage, but I frankly don't remember.
25% of the cost.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
May we have a roll call vote, please?
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
11 ayes, 0 noes.
That's unanimous. Thank you. Dooley, you done?
I am done. Thank you.
Charter Review Committee met on May 6th, and we went through three departments, weights and measures, emergency response, and youth services. We'll meet again on June 3rd and take up some more. We're getting toward the end of the departments. We've still got a lot of work to do, but we're making some progress. May I answer any questions? Okay, let's go to Kathy Luz Herrera, Resolution F.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Resolution F, reaffirming support for a single-payer approach to controlling health care costs and ensuring everyone is covered, and urging the New York State Assembly and Senate to enact the New York Health Act A5062 and S3535.
Is there a second?
So move.
Seconded by Julie Kiefer.
Could I?
Yes, go ahead.
Great. I'd like to take a minute to introduce this and to give the public and my colleagues a brief
history
lesson.
Excuse me, Kathy,
and
for clarification, this is the revised version that was in the packets. Is that true?
Can I just start out with this one?
You're moving the one that was...
Yeah, the one that that I put on here.
In the packet?
Yes, the one that's Resolution F, not the revised version with submitted changes. And I'm just going to talk about it briefly. The public is going to hear about this. Those of y'all that are legislators, you have the one-page statement. I know for some people this is new, but you remember that the county legislature has expressed its support and preference for a single-payer approach to this. You know that access to health care continues to be a major concern. You also remember that the Tompkins County Legislature has stated that it believes that controlling health care costs and ensuring health care for all residents, both of these things are of paramount importance. The simplest approach is to move directly from the current multi-payer approach with its high cost of administration, its high cost of marketing, and huge profits for shareholders of the many insurance companies to a single-payer system where the government is the insurer of all, and it's a system that's used in other industrialized democracies. New York Health would generate savings by replacing the complicated, costly, and often chaotic claims procedure that is currently employed by thousands of public and private insurance providers with simple, one-stop, single-payer system for all. Let me just say that the New York Health would pool all revenue, all health revenue sources into a dedicated New York Health Trust Fund, and it would pay providers directly. New York Health will reduce billing expenses, administrative waste, monopolistic pricing of drugs and medical devices, fraud, and overall health care spending would be reduced by 15%. That's $45 billion per year by 2019. This is in New York State. And New York State Health, as referenced in some of the comments from the public, would reduce health care costs for government, public schools, public school districts, businesses, and individuals in New York State. It would eliminate the local share funding of Medicaid. Remember that? This is something we talk about at almost every meeting. This has been a huge financial burden, not just for county property taxpayers, but renters. Everybody pays for this ultimately. And this would eliminate out-of-pocket expenses, insurance premiums, insurance copays, and deductibles. Under this, 98% of New Yorkers will pay less for their health care than they do today. And businesses, especially small businesses, will benefit from reduced costs. This is something we discussed a lot in the run-up to the presidential election, the last one and the one before that. We've expressed support for this repeatedly, and now there's a bill in New York State that, as was mentioned by members of the public, has a very good chance of passing. Time is of the essence. New York State Health would positively impact both individual health outcomes and public health outcomes. This is something that was just being talked about by Chair of Health and Human Services Committee Peter Stein, the importance in the impact of individual health outcomes and how that reduces costs to public health. New York State would save enough money in unnecessary costs to pay for the cost of universal health care coverage for all, extending coverage to the uninsured. So the two resolves, and I just briefly summarized, actually plagiarized from the resolution that was suggested by members of the public that brought it pretty much directly from wording from this resolution that's being considered at the state. The resolves would state that the Tompkins County Legislature strongly supports adoption of the New York Health Act and that we think we should waste no more time tinkering with the present profit-based insurance system and that we should seize the moment. For those that would say this is politically infeasible, I would like to say we're not new to being in the vanguard of movements, and this stands a real possibility of being passed. And I would like for us to take this opportunity to urge New York State to accomplish this major and long-needed reform. So I moved this resolution. I appreciate the opportunity to get it on the agenda, and I understand that Dooley Kiefer, my colleague, has some suggested changes that she has reviewed with me.
Dooley, do you want to speak to those we have in our packet as a revised version?
Yes. I thought it was worth specifying again why it's called single payer and what the benefit of that is. So there was a new second resolve that said a single payer approach, as the name implies, only federalizes how healthcare providers are paid, leaving the choice of doctors and hospitals completely up to each individual and the choice of treatment up to each patient and his or her doctor. that seemed useful to crib from our earlier resolution several years ago. And I reordered the resolved to make it a little less didactic and had Karen make a reasonable list of people who should receive it. So there aren't significant changes, except they're significant to me. There was something else I wanted to talk about this resolution.
Well, do you want to move this as an amendment, Julie?
If Kathy would accept it as friendly. It didn't go through a committee, so...
I'm just trying to figure out what's the best way to do this that would get the most support from the most people, and I don't really know yet, so I'm going to say I accept it as friendly.
Julie, you're the seconder.
Yes.
So, all right. So now we're talking about the revised version that's in the packet. All right. Julie, you wanted to make another comment?
Yes, I do. Kathy spoke very clearly about many aspects of this. What I had our staff put in your packets were comments from the Albany City Treasurer about single payer and what it means for taxes. And I have no idea whether people have had a chance to read that particular one pager. It was really fascinating. There's no stronger measure New York could take to cut our property taxes than to pass this bill into law. Hidden health care costs are present in every product, good, or service in our economy, and at every level of taxation. And rather than read you his whole analysis, I think that alone is almost a good enough reason to vote for all the good things that you get with this bill. We all know what Medicare costs us. This would do away with that. You heard one of our speakers under the privilege of the floor from the public refer to that. And it would be a huge saving for us all at all levels of government.
Are we ready to move to a vote? Martha?
I would just want to add Andrea Stewart Cousins to the list of senators in the last resolved.
Any objection?
Not at all.
We've got Mike and then Peter.
I'll speak on it quickly, I guess. I have to commend everybody for speaking on this with such confidence on that these things will happen. I don't know if half those things are true, that what you're saying. That, hey, this will lower costs over here, or this will lower costs over here. Frankly, I wouldn't have accepted that as a friendly amendment, that you're going to get to keep your doctor. I mean, the ACA has been in place for about 5 years now. We already know that a lot of people didn't get to keep their doctors, and now you're saying, well, this time, we're going to do it. I'm sorry. I think a lot of people just aren't going to believe you. So there's a lot of problems with this. I mean, A, I haven't read the resolution that's in front of the Assembly. I don't think a lot of people have. It's not. So what you're saying is, let's all vote on something again that we haven't read, but, you know, we think that this is the way to go. This single payer is the way. It's like the marketing thing I see here. It's going to be Medicare for all. Why do you think that? Why won't it be Medicaid for all? Once again, I see something that's going to be Medicaid for all, so that directly impacts my family in a negative. Because, frankly, I work pretty hard for my health insurance. I think a lot of people do. You're going under the assumption that government workers and teachers will be giving up their health care benefits, that those unions have fought for the last 40 years, and they're going to say, hey, you know what, we don't need those anymore because we've got this universal health care. But don't you worry about that, because we don't need those anymore. I don't buy that. I mean, we just went through a whole negotiation where that was difficult. And now we're saying, oh, you know what? We know that that was a lot of pain for you, but we're gonna be able to pass this. So you're not going to need that health care anymore. I just don't see it. I mean, it's also like when you say, well, we're going to save money with fraud. Medicaid people are getting charged all the time with fraud. I mean, New York City, they just arrested like 12 doctors for Medicaid fraud. So it's not like, wow, it's a government system. We're just going to eliminate fraud. We're saying that this is going to get paid for by ACA subsidies, which may not even exist next month. I mean, I wasn't crazy about the ACA passing, but it's there. So basically, this resolution to me says, well, the ACA has failed. We are going to go on to a different format now. We want to go to a whole different system. I don't know. It seems like an easier system if we're all crazy about you know, single payer, why don't you just raise the income limits on Medicaid? See how that works for you. I mean, everybody I hear from Medicaid isn't really that crazy about Medicaid. Medicare, sure. But, you know, when I'm 65, I'll get Medicare. But for right now, this just seems like another tax, whereas you're going to give me Medicaid, and then everybody between the ages of 26 and 65 is going to have to still buy out health insurance. And if you don't think that happens in other countries, you're incorrect. I mean, you go to other countries, sure, they have universal health care, but if you're wealthy enough, you're buying supplemental insurance. So, I don't know. I don't see this. I mean, a lot of the things you have in here have already been disproven by the ACA. And I'm sorry if I don't put, you know, my long-term stock in the guy who is doing the books for the city of Albany. I mean, I think, I don't know, I would like to base it on a few more opinions out there than that one person. So that's all I have to say on this. Thanks.
We go to Peter Stein next.
Well, I'm not going to vote for this, and I'd like to explain why. It's not that I'm either for or against a single payer. I have personally been in a country where I was treated under single payer, and I was at another country in Europe where I was treated successfully and under a system which wasn't single payer. And frankly, there wasn't a whole lot of difference between the two. It's a technical point. But I think the reason I'm unwilling to vote for this is not that I've got anything against single payer. I think it's being oversold for this particular thing. It reminds me of a story. If it sounds that good, it probably isn't. I mean, it doesn't seem to me that you can pay for 1/6 of the whole economy and not have it affect any taxes seriously. I can't believe the governor would sign a bill like this because of the concern that, in fact, it's going to actually cost a huge amount of money. Unless, of course, you completely destroy the whole way in which money goes between a payer and a physician and a drug company and someone who's building a new machine to look at this. It's a very complicated thing. As I say, it's 15% of the total economy. And frankly, from what I've seen of New York's ability to handle large expenditures well, I am not impressed. This is going to be a huge, if in fact we did it, I believe it will be a huge drain on the tax fund. And we now have New York, the total inability to provide basic education for the children in the state of New York. And the governor says there's no money to do it. That's all. I can't believe that this is going to be that simple. But the basic reason that I'm opposed to it is that I don't think this is going to pass. I don't think it's going to pass anywhere. But frankly, it strikes me as a stake in the heart of the Affordable Care Act. Next month, the Supreme Court is going to decide whether or not we abolish the Affordable Care Act. And if they end up abolishing the Affordable Care Act, I agree it's one of many things that we'd have to look for as to how it is we're going to live in this country and remain healthy without the Affordable Care Act. But I think that this muddies the waters at this point. As far as I'm concerned, the Affordable Care Act is meeting the need that it said it would. And I do not I believe it's a national problem that we face, not a state problem, not a county problem. It's a national problem. And I think it's a mistake to say that we've lost, effectively, that we've lost faith in the Affordable Care Act, so much so that we're going to leave the program of the government to make our own program here. Sounds like madness to me. So for that reason, I've got nothing against it, okay? But to hear these little snippets as to what various people are going to say, I mean, let me say that during those years when Hillary Clinton had all of the best health economists in the country together in Washington trying to build some kind of a system which would work in America, they didn't manage to convince the people, and the thing that they came up with was not single payer. So I'm not sure that the people that I'm willing to trust the people that you quote to understand the issues and the problems enough to put my signature down on this when I don't really understand how it can possibly work.
Okay, we understand your point. Before I go to Martha and then Dooley, I want to point out that I didn't call for a break because I really naively, I guess, thought we were close to the end here. So please be crisp so that we can get to a vote on this. Martha?
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but Mike, it got me going. I want to just first say that I was disappointed that there was an objection to speaking to on this while the public was here that were interested in this resolution. We usually do that as a courtesy, and I'm sorry you objected to doing that tonight. Two numbers, 2% and 20%. The overhead for Medicare and Medicaid, by the way, is between 2 and 3%. That's administration, that's waste, that's fraud, that's whatever it is, 2 or 3%. Ask Betty Falco. It's a solid number. That means 98% of the bucks, 98% of the dollars pay for health care. In the Affordable Care Act, one of the key provisions required that if insurance companies in overhead was greater than 20%, they would have to rebate customers. They would have to rebate their clients. In the first year, I don't know how many millions, but lots of money came back to clients because, in fact, the insurance companies could not document that they'd kept overhead to 20%. Their overhead was well beyond 20%. So all this myth about the private sector being so much more efficient is exactly that. It's a myth. I think that, sure, this would be complicated. Sure, I don't know all the details, but you know what? Most other maybe every other industrialized country does this. This is not an experiment. There would be big changes. The state of Vermont is already looking at doing this on top of the ACA. We're not the first state to think about this either. And I just have to say, we pay for health care in so many ways, and there are so many distortions in the system. I think that this is something that we really ought to try. And really, you said it's like Medicaid. Well, the problem with Medicaid is that there's such a big gatekeeper function. We call it fraud because when there's Medicaid fraud, because somebody makes a little too much money to get such and such a health, such health care or treatment by a doctor or surgery, whatever. That's because by definition you're saying that person doesn't deserve it. This says health care is a right. We all deserve it. It's that simple. So if you just take, instead of taking away, the income restrictions for Medicaid, I like to think about it as taking away the age restrictions on Medicare. And that's why we call it Medicare for All.
Dooley, can you please try to be shorter? And then Mike, and then I'd really like to vote.
Well, first of all, unlike ACA, this is it's a 20-page bill, and you could read it. It's quite clear. It recognizes the fact, which Martha alluded to, that overhead, which is the middleman being paid for unnecessary work, in my opinion, is what drives up our medical costs so dramatically. This does away with the middleman. For all of those insurance companies' workers who are put out of business for this, this act includes retraining and notes that many of them might be used locally to help implement this. The argument that health care is a right speaks really strongly to me. I have lived overseas where they had this kind of care, and it worked for me. I don't know where Peter lived. Maybe it was a different country. I was well treated in France. The idea that we as a society can't get over the idea of having health care tied to jobs and employment, can't get over the idea that we have to keep insurance companies in business when there are all other kinds of insurances that the companies make money on, but they shouldn't be doing it on this. Those ideas are so passé, and Hillary's efforts at redesigning our health care were totally contaminated by all of the corporate interests, the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, even the health care companies like hospitals that are corporations. My apologies to you, Nate. Back then, it was a serious business of lobbying. So it is allowed under the ACA for states to go their own way and do something like this, and that is exactly how this happened in Canada. One province adopted a single-payer approach, and it gradually went nationwide. New York could be that state. It's legal to do. It doesn't undermine the ACA, and it works in every other industrialized country, as Martha said, and I won't repeat anymore.
Okay. Mike,
I'll be very quick, Mike.
Then let's vote.
I will be very quick. I mean, just now I heard four things. I mean, we talk about retraining of these people to do other jobs. What jobs? I mean, that's one of the problems. Number two, Medicaid, if we're going to look at Medicaid seriously, maybe we should look at the health outcomes for Medicaid, just like the Oregon study that came out a year ago that said, wow, the Medicaid outcomes are terrible. It's like having no insurance at all. So we mentioned Vermont earlier. Vermont dumped their single-payer system about 6 months ago because they said, we can't figure out how to pay for this, and they did dump it. It was pretty widely reported on that. And, well, I don't know. Again, I found a lot of errors in there. I will read over this very large bill that's out there. I find it amazing that we take all this anecdotal evidence that, well, I was in such and such a European country, and I got great care. Well, it's good to know that when well-moneyed Americans like us get great care in overseas countries. I know people that went to Greece and had to pay $100 to see the doctor. But, hey, they had the $100. So, I don't know. I would like to see a little more case study on this before we say, oh, well, all these other countries do it, and it works out fine. You've got a country of 330 million people with people arriving every day, and you're saying that, well, we can absorb all that. I'm waiting for the ACA to absorb all that right now, and if they can, great. But I would like to see that happen before we go down a different path here. So,
Kathy and Nate, 30 seconds each.
Thank you. First, I'm going to ask for a roll call vote. And second, I just want to say that I recognize this probably won't pass tonight. I would like if it did, because time is of the essence, just like the geothermal bill. And this is actually very consistent with things that we've voted for in the past and very consistent with what we stand for. And I could take some time to refute point by point, but I'm hoping if it doesn't pass tonight, even though it may be too late, I'll have an opportunity to discuss this in more detail on June 2nd. So if you want to not have to discuss this more on June 2nd, join me tonight, please, in voting for this.
Nate, I'm not going to make a position one way or the other. I will support this resolution. But whether we're talking about single payer or even the ACA and Medicare reform, that all of it requires a fundamental difference in the way that we use healthcare currently. Healthcare is currently a fee-for-service model. So if you use a service and you ask your doctor, hey, doctor, I want an MRI, the doctor gives you an MRI. Right? Now, that system is not sustainable. And, in fact, all the countries that do have single-payer systems also ration their healthcare. And rationing of healthcare is it's a concept that Americans simply do not understand right now and don't accept. And so we would have to begin to change the mindset of Americans in order to do it. Now, rationing healthcare doesn't mean that you have to have HMOs that say no all the time, but rationing healthcare could mean that you have better providers that educate people about what their options are and what the true risks of things are, that you have providers that use evidence-based medicine rather than trying new therapies that are costly, that benefit pharmaceutical companies, instead of tried and true, more cost-effective measures. That all could be done. And right now that's already being done through the ACA. But you need to have that fundamental change if you are really going to make a single-payer system ever work, or if you're going to have the current system work.
Peter, 25 seconds.
25 seconds. I just want to tell you the countries in which I was in. I was treated, if I may, Dooley. I didn't interrupt you.
Please just make
so. I was in Germany, which does not have single payer, but had a very simple system of competing insurance companies, which pretty much guaranteed that everybody in the country had health care and health care that looked the same. They all got the same treatment. And there were a 100 or so insurance companies that competed with us competed with each other for pennies to try to bring about the price lowering that a free economy does. That was one. The other one was in Denmark, where I went into a hospital not thinking I was sick and looked at a doctor, and the doctor said, you may be very sick. You have to stay in a hospital for a week to have a series of tests done. And I stayed there. And when I got out, they said, I hope you are not surprised by this, but that'll mean $25 for the whole term. That was a single payer. Both of them gave me good health care.
All right. Now, remember, we're voting on the revised version that's in your packet, and we've been asked for a roll call vote, so I'll ask our clerk to please read the roll.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Morey?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote?
How many yes votes were there?
Well, we aren't announcing
so far,
the vote yet.
I lost count.
Seven.
Anyone wish to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
Seven ayes, four noes.
Resolution fails for failure to get 8 votes. Martha?
Could somebody, a legislator who's not here, bring this back next legislative meeting without needing to be refiled again?
It could be a motion to reconsider.
Yes.
Thank you, everybody. I appreciate it. Now I want to go vote.
All right, let's take the minutes of May 5th, please. Someone want to move those?
Move.
There's a move. Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn Morey. Discussion of the minutes? Hopefully not. All in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? We have one opposed. Any unfinished business? We have a motion to adjourn?
Move.
Martha? Seconded by Leslin. All in favor? Opposed? Carried. Thank you all. Thank you to our staff of Kathy and Michelle and Marcia and Mike and Karen up in the control booth and everyone that's here. Thanks very much.